From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Welcome back. It's your Thursday edition of Locked On Chiefs, and you lucky people have got to listen to all three of us today. I'm Ryan Tracy, the founder of Rogue Analytics. He's Seth Kaiser over at The Athletic, and Chris Clark, our man of, the things that we never think of. He runs both Locked On Chiefs and is a senior analyst at Chiefs Digest with Matt Derrick, who will be on again later this week. Fellas, how are you doing?
How are you doing, Chris? That's what I want to know.
As well as can be expected, we'll put it that way.
Nice.
All right. Well, we're excited. I'm excited. We have stuff to talk about, quarterbacks and D-backs and all kinds of stuff. Oh, my. Where should we begin? Oh, injuries. Right.
So, well, that took an abruptly depressing turn.
Well, let's not, but because
you say depressing. I was going to say, you say depressing. I say it's good that they went out and they were able to get Jeff Allen, because if they didn't
have Jeff Allen this week.
I don't know.
You have so many kids, I can't even keep up.
I love Jeff Allen. I was telling people Jeff Allen was good when the narrative around him was, oh, he's terrible, oh, he sucks. And then finally, like his last year in KC, people are like, oh, you know, he's pretty good. It's like, no kidding. He's been good for like 3 years, people. And so I'm happy that he's back. I mean, you know, he's struggled with injuries. I think he's healthy now. I'm excited. Now, I'm worried about my son, you know.
Right.
You should be. Who wouldn't be? You know, he's my son. But, I'm so sorry. Speaking of my son, I'm sorry for like 20 seconds of personal stuff. A lot of people, because I wasn't able to appear last week, and I completely forgot about this earlier. I know you guys had mentioned there was just some personal stuff. Hey, everyone who reached out and like offered thoughts and prayers and stuff, my son's doing really well. He was in the hospital. He's fine. He's doing great. And so I just really appreciate the well-wishers and all that stuff. And Ryan and Chris, you guys were just great, giving me a lot of grace, canceling at the last minute. And I appreciate you guys a lot. So, yeah, sorry. Injuries.
I'm glad he's all right.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, and here's the thing, is that they ought to feel lucky, because Jeff Allen, I mean, yeah, he was in Houston, but it's still in his head. It's going to come back. You know, it's riding a bike in terms of the line calls and what they're going to try to do. And at this point, folks, we don't know about Mitch Morse yet. Seth's other son.
Yeah.
But if Morse can't go, Allen's not a candidate to play center, in my opinion. So Irving moves over, you stick Allen back in at the left guard, and I think they're going to be all right.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay. The reality of the situation is, and I feel bad. I don't want to act like Patrick Mahomes is the solution for everything, but he is.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, well, he kind of is. It's like, you know, interior. Wow, I got caught in my own little verbal trap there. Anyway, what is wrong with me? I'm trying to express, said the lawyer, who is so eloquent, that with Mahomes, these things don't matter as much. Pressure is just not as big a deal. There, I said it. Yes. People ask me why I'm not on radio. Why don't you have your own show? It's like, because I can't talk, among other reasons. Ugh.
Chris, do you feel just as confident that really, no matter who has to play, because they are getting, they're getting pretty thin out there,
that
Mahomes is going to be able to compensate?
Well, what I will say, and I know we're getting ready to talk more about Denver, but what I will say about this is that I think that it's a good time of the season for them to be having this injury if they're going to have it. If Morse is going to be out for a couple of weeks, which we don't know at this point, but certainly looks like a possibility, and they're getting ready to play Cleveland. They're getting ready to play, obviously, Denver, Cleveland, and then Arizona. So you would have three games to get the middle of your offensive line figured out, because then game four is Aaron Donald and the Los Angeles Rams, who I'm not trying to get ahead of ourselves, but that is going to be a terrible matchup, no matter who is there, in my opinion.
Can they play eight linemen against him?
You know,
that it would matter.
All they need is they should just put Dorian O'Daniel in. I'm kidding. But here's the thing, though. The Browns have some very good pass rushers as well. Although, I mean, they got edge guys and stuff, but I mean, they've got some interior guys that are good too. The Broncos did pretty well. I mean, so there's really no easy stretch, although I agree. This is like a stretch in which these are teams that the Chiefs shouldn't have to score 40 on to beat. I'm telling you, I think the over-under for the Rams game should be at like 80 because
yeah,
I don't see either defense stopping either offense.
I'm not going to argue.
Well, but I feel a lot better about the Chiefs stopping the Broncos this week.
You should. Because the defense, man, how much fun was that watching them terrorize the Red Rocket?
Easy now.
But he is.
I know, but that name makes me nervous.
Oh, there are children listening, Seth.
What? Okay. Look, yeah. The evangelical pastor, he was really going there. That's the direction that I was going. Goodness gracious. We talked about Dorian O'Daniel, but I think we might have another reason to feel good about the defense, guys.
And what reason would that be, Seth?
I wouldn't be absolutely stunned if there were some just a little bit of fire with the tiny amount of smoke that we've seen with this whole Patrick Peterson thing.
Oh.
I want it. I want it, man. I want it bad.
Yeah. You can want Patrick Peterson all you want. I want Landon Collins.
Let's trade for both of them. Let's just go nuts. Let's get ballistic. Let's get weird, man. Let's trade next year's first round for Peterson and the first round after that for Collins and just go crazy.
Who do the Raiders have that we can throw a first round pick at? Because they have five first round picks in the next two drafts.
They do. Oh, well, the Raiders. Oh my! I cannot believe they got a first rounder for Amari Cooper. By the way, before everyone loses faith in my analysis, I was kidding about the Peterson Collins thing. I don't think you could actually do that. I mean, that would be pretty awesome, though. I mean,
yay or nay, one or the other. And folks, the reason that we're talking about it is because we have had several sources, both on the record and off, tell us that the Chiefs have reached out and have talked to the Cardinals about that particular player.
Which is cool.
Make that call to the Giants. That's all I'm saying. Dude, I don't care. Honestly, you say what you want. Joel Corey was on 610 today, and he actually said that he thinks it's a first and a fourth round pick to get Patrick Peterson. Mm-hmm. For me, I give that up for Landon Collins in a heartbeat.
But do the Giants?
Well, I don't know.
No, he's a building block. They're never letting him go.
Yeah.
It's not like he's Carl Joseph. You can have him for a song. Not that I want him because he's terrible in coverage.
But yeah, he can have him for a song.
Well, but
and I can sing one, I guarantee.
Lock on Forest said that the Giants are open for business, so we'll see.
Well, back in the realm of at least a possibility, what is the ramification? If you were able to secure somebody like Peterson, and I agree with you, I think a first and a fourth is probably an acceptable price tag because he is an elite player. And no matter what that first round pick is, even if it's in the top 10, there's still a risk that if you chose someone at his position with a top 10 pick, they still might not be half the player he is. So right. He is a gold standard at this point.
Right. Well, I think those are things that we should definitely talk about as soon as we take a quick break. How's that sound?
Ooh, teaser.
Oh, let's talk about it. All right, we'll talk about that right after this break, and I'm going to lead us back in because I'm feeling pretty professional today.
Are you looking to reach new customers? I could be mentioning your business right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with their sponsors than on web pages or other forms of media. Our demographic is 98% males and offers more opportunities than traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor this podcast today. Email us at lockedonchiefs@gmail.com. Okay, guys, let's talk about your bedroom. You remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get the extra confidence in bed. Listen up, BlueChew.com, that's blue like the color blue. It brings you the first chewable from the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits,
no waiting in a pharmacy, and no awkwardness. They're made right here in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships theirs direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. We thank them for sponsoring the podcast.
Welcome back. No, I'm just kidding.
Is that a kidney stone?
I figured I would just keep rolling with the Seth can't talk thing tonight. This is why everyone's Team Ryan at this point. It's been a very frustrating year for Team Seth. But I know, it's terrible.
I can tell you for a fact that not everybody's Team Ryan, and I would bet that 75% isn't Team Ryan. So,
well, let's change that right now, folks. Let's renew this. Hashtag Team Ryan or Team Seth or Chris doesn't care.
And just remember, if Ryan had his way, Anthony Sherman would be on the field for every single snap, and you'd have three fullbacks on this roster for every single snap.
And the Chiefs would be averaging 75 points a game. Anyway.
If I had my way, I'd clone him three times and run that game.
Anthony Sherman would be playing corner. So, okay, Patrick Peterson, here's the deal. Depending on what you think of Pro Football Focus, I think they're an educated opinion. I don't think their word is gospel. Especially the grades, that's kind of subjective for my taste. But if you don't have time to review a player, their grades are an okay place to start. I've never seen them be completely out of the ballpark. All three of the Chiefs starting corners, right? Because there's three starting corners in reality. They're all rated as above average players, right? Steven Nelson's been playing pretty well. Kendall Fuller's been playing well. Orlando Scandrick's been playing well. So I think the biggest argument people have is, well, why do this if the corners aren't the problem? So I'm curious what you guys think of that argument. Well, the corners are all three playing well. Why would we do that? And we just watched them play really well. Yeah, AJ Green kind of had his way on one drive, but overall they were feisty, they were competitive, they contested passes, they tackle well. So I'm curious, I'm playing devil's advocate here in case you haven't picked up on it. What's your argument against that? The idea, well, the corners are playing well, there's no need to get a cornerback.
My argument is simple. If I'm arguing for Patrick Peterson, my argument is simple. Orlando Scandrick and Steven Nelson are gone after this, or could be gone after this year.
And
Patrick Peterson,
well, and here's another
one of the best players in the NFL, especially at his position. He may be the best corner in the NFL. So,
yep. Well, and here's another one. Fuller's been good, but he hasn't been all he was cracked up to be when they traded for him.
It's true. Although I think some of that's skewed. So that's the question that I think really gets tricky on this is, are we sure that even if they did trade for Patrick Peterson, they would use him right?
And also, how about you just go straight to hell, Ryan?
Well,
I'll tell you what.
I'm driving. Jump
how
on.
Dare you? No, Fuller has had some great coverage snaps. He has not been as good as, like, in preseason. He was like lights out, right?
Yeah.
And he hasn't been as good as he was last year for sure. He's been good. I think he's been the best of the three.
Agree.
But he hasn't been incredible. And I mean, Patrick Peterson. Well, we'll see. So we've heard Chris's argument, Ryan.
I won't argue against it. I think that Scandrick is doing a good job. He's doing exactly what I wanted him to do when he came here. He's savvy. He knows how to cheat the system. The guy holds every other play, but he hides it from the guys with the yellow flags. So, and I freely admit that, but he's getting the job done.
He holds constantly. And Nelson's kind of a grabby player too. And so, like, it's funny watching them in coverage on all 22. You're like, man, if I was a receiver, I'd be so mad right now.
Right? But Scandrick's your four, I think I'm really happy with that because you can give Peterson half the field. And that helps the safeties. And I think that's the biggest weak part. And I'm not 100% that they're playing well enough because 100 yards to the one guy you know you have to stop, I'm not happy with that. And maybe that is Bob, but I want to see more.
Well, but what I will say against AJ Green, if he's getting 100 yards and nobody else is doing anything, I don't care. And I understand what you're saying, but he is that type of player and you don't have a corner that is in a position to match up with him. Yes, Patrick Peterson would be a much better matchup, but Bob isn't going to move him all over the field.
Right. But I mean, Peterson is, I mean, he's unique. He's big. He's strong. Yep. He's fast. He picks off passes. He's a playmaker. He can follow guys. He can play zone. He can play man. He tackles. He is an exceptional corner. He's a top five corner in the NFL. He's consistent and a playmaker. Here's the big thing. Patrick Peterson is a borderline shutdown corner. He is now, I don't believe there is such thing as a true shutdown corner in the NFL anymore. I just don't. Not with all the rules they have in place today.
Yeah.
But he is exceptional. And anytime you can add an exceptional corner to your roster, you should do it. And like what you said, they've got a solid trio, but that they're not a great trio. And suddenly, I mean, if that's a really strong group. Peterson, Fuller, Nelson, that's an upper-tier cornerback trio, in my opinion. And you round it out with Skandrick, that's an upper-tier – that's one of the better groups of four in the NFL. And yeah. When you have that, you can start scheming around some weaknesses at safety because you can ask guys to be left on an island a little more often. Peterson can be left on an island. That allows you to do all sorts of things. He also is the type of player that quarterbacks avoid, which allows you to do things schematically. And finally, like Chris pointed out very cogently, the reality is that Orlando Skandrick could be gone after this year. And what is, I mean, he's in his 30s. If I recall, is he 29? No, he's like 32. Isn't
he? He's older than that.
And so Skandrick, you're biding time with Skandrick. He was never going to be a long-term solution. And here's the thing with Steven Nelson. Contracts only go up. Patrick Peterson's contract is pretty reasonable over the next 2 years. Yep. It's like $12 million a year.
Yep.
For the quality player he is, yeah.
And for a quality player. Here's the thing. If Nelson keeps playing at the level he's playing at, which isn't lights out, but it's good, and the Chiefs make a deep run in the playoffs, he's going to get a contract for $8 million or $9 million a year somewhere.
I was just going to say, can you imagine having Patrick Peterson backing up Tyreek Hill on punt returns?
That would be great. I mean, man, you could put them both out there. Yeah. You know, hey, who are you going to kick to? Someone's going to be standing there. I mean, there's so much going on there. And the reality is he is a much higher level player. Now, I do think Kendall Fuller's ceiling is to be nearly as good as Patrick Peterson because I watched him do it last year. Okay. So, and I've seen him do it in spurts this year. So you are just raising the entire level of defense. And then also you can't tell me that a guy like Orlando Skandrick or Steven Nelson couldn't be used in more of a Swiss Army knife role saying, okay, we've had some real problems against tight ends. Eric Berry's not back yet. Now Lucas has done a pretty good job against tight ends, but I mean, crud, Steven Nelson's bigger than Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not taller, but he's definitely thicker. Lucas is a svelte dude. That's right.
Well,
I said
and the Bengals
svelte.
Tight end that I could never pronounce his name proved that the other night.
He just overpowered him, and maybe that would have happened to any corner. Who knows? But you can't tell me that Steven Nelson doesn't know this defense well enough to move around and have a few more, you know, just some kind of role to where you put him back there, have him play robber. I don't care. But mm-hmm. It adds to the talent. And now the only thing that you got to think about, and I was talking to Josh Briscoe about this, you got to think about the locker room because that's a proud group. For sure. But at the end of the day, talent wins. And you can't tell me that the locker room wouldn't be psyched to have Patrick Peterson. You know, yes, the corner who gets pushed down, he's probably going to be bummed. But the reality is Orlando Skandrick and Steven Nelson, whichever one of them got pushed down to four, those aren't your team leaders. It's not going to affect the entire group. And that sounds callous. And I like those guys, and I like how they're playing. But, I mean, for me, it's all about what makes the team best overall, not just what makes an individual player happy. And I think Skandrick and Nelson would both be willing to do a more varied role. Plus, it's 2018. Fourth corners do get on the field a fair amount.
Yes. And I think this team would welcome a player of his caliber.
Absolutely.
That's a sign that you're going somewhere where you're trying to go.
Well, Travis Kelce retweeted someone who said that they should go get him.
Well,
I don't know if you knew that.
Travis gets to make the decision. That's great, but you know.
Well, maybe they put him in charge of it. I mean, I don't know. It's been a crazy year. Brett Veach might do it. He's pretty crazy.
We could go on about this for an hour. Let's take another quick break, and when we come back, we're actually going to talk about the game against the Bengals just a little bit to talk about the game that Patrick Mahomes had. Okay, Seth, we know you've looked at the film. What did you see in that game?
A game manager. I'm not even
Wait, is this 2017?
I'm not even being funny. Well, I mean, I am a little, I guess. But the reality is Mahomes, what I've looked at and what I wrote about is it was kind of a different direction because the Chiefs schematically beat the Bengals. It was right back to what we saw with like the Chargers and the Steelers in the first few weeks. And Mahomes just makes all the right decisions. What we saw against the Bengals, like the first half, he was borderline perfect. I mean, just perfect. And he didn't have to make any crazy plays. The best play he made, and it was a great play, Watkins dropped the pass. Man, I'm still mad about that. The missed field goal drive, Mahomes makes an incredible throw, and Watkins dropped it. I was very irritated about that.
You still
but. Yeah, I still am. It's but he was exceptional, and in the second half he played really well too. The reality is Mahomes is he is a turbocharged game manager. He really is, and that's what I didn't expect this year. I really thought that he would maybe be like on Alex Smith's level, but great in a different way. Like Alex Smith's level last year, right? To where he would make a bunch of really great plays, but he'd have some stupid plays. And I didn't think he'd be able to run the offense as well as Alex does. When you watch him, he's doing everything. He is changing plays pre-snap. He's changing protections. He's doing everything that we saw Alex Smith do. The idea that Reed wasn't going to trust Mahomes, absurd. And you watch it against the Bengals. He is an uber-charged, turbo-charged game manager. He is not Brett Favre. I cannot believe I'm about to say this. He's not Brett Favre. He's Aaron freaking Rodgers, man, because he can do it all.
Okay.
Oof.
Let me ask you guys a couple of questions about Mahomes, though. I'm not trying to take anything away from the game he had. And if I miss this after the game, if he said something about this specific play, but that interception he had, if you change the narrative a little bit and it's a one score game, are you still upset about that interception? And I asked this on Twitter and I got a whole bunch of different responses. I'm just curious what you both think. If that's a one score game and he throws that pick deep again, are you mad or are you still happy in wanting him to continue to make those types of throws?
Right.
I'm pushing the ball downfield.
Right.
Yeah.
A deep interception like that, as much as you don't want to see it turned over, it's in a position you can recover from. It's not.
It's an air punt.
You know, it's not throwing the flat where you throw up for a pick six.
Right. It's an air punt. And also,
it was a good decision choice. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, the decision was fine. And here's the thing. He's thrown five picks in the last three games in a vacuum. That could potentially be somewhat worrisome. The reality is of those picks, one of them was a bad decision, really. The rest were just throws that were off place. And here's the interesting thing, and this is something that I shared on Briscoe's show, and I'll share with you guys. It's in the article. He is not throwing potential picks at a high rate. He's throwing like these games where he – like the one game against Jacksonville, he had the two picks. He didn't throw any other potential interceptions. Against the Patriots, he didn't throw any other potential interceptions. On Sunday night, he threw one other potential interception along with the pick he actually threw. Here's why I'm bringing that up. Most quarterbacks, not Alex Smith. Alex Smith averaged a shade under one potential pick a game. But Alex Smith, as you know, is unusual, right? He throws way fewer potential picks. And what a potential pick is, you guys know this, but in case you got listeners who haven't, it's a play where the ball should have been intercepted or was at least at a high risk of being intercepted, but the defender dropped it, okay? Most quarterbacks throw around two potential picks a game, okay? And the reality is most defenders aren't really good at catching the ball. That's part of why they play defense, right? So what you have is most quarterbacks throw a couple potential picks a game, and usually defenses drop one of them or drop two of them and maybe pick off a third, that kind of thing, okay? What's happened with Luck over the last 3 weeks is all of his potential picks, except like two, have been actually picked off. He's had passes – he's had potential picks actually intercepted at a much higher rate than normal. That's probably going to equalize out eventually. So the interceptions thing doesn't worry me at all, just in case someone might think that. And that interception doesn't worry me at all. He just underthrew it, which is hilarious because, you know, he's Mahomes.
Right.
But he honestly, it's really funny for everything else. He's thrown the deep ball pretty well this year. obviously. He's thrown it at a very high level, but he hasn't been like the best deep ball thrower in the NFL like everyone expected. He's been the best quarterback in the NFL this year, but the deep ball, you can see him still working out the kinks and the timing and everything because he'll over and under throw those a little bit at times. And so I'm not worried about it. It was a good decision. He just underthrew it.
And like I said, I'm not trying to nitpick his game. I just was curious because to me, I don't care about that interception. To me, he's trying to make a play, and yeah, it was a good decision. Even the announcer said, and I haven't had a chance to go back and watch all 22, and I'm sure, Seth, you've already seen that throw. Tyreek Hill was open from what I've heard and from what I remember seeing. So if he places that where Tyreek Hill is the only one that can catch it, either Hill catches it like he catches 99% of the balls thrown his way on deep passes other than that one he dropped in the end zone.
Yeah.
Then it's either a drop ball or a touchdown. So
yes, absolutely. And that's what happened there. I think Mahomes is honestly still working out deep timing and deep throwing. And the reality is the more you throw deep, those are tough throws. Throwing the ball 40 yards down the field on point is tough to do. And it just so happened the defender made a decent play to pick it off. He didn't have to make a great play, but that's just what's happened. And so I'm fine with him taking those shots. Like Ryan, like you said, stretch the field, man. The Chiefs are attempting more air yards than all but like three or four teams in the NFL. And that's part of what's making them so impossible to defend. That's what's making these short passes. They did a bunch of these little quick throws to the sideline, screens and stuff against the Bengals. Those are so effective because they can't just play those. They've got to respect the potential 40-yard bomb.
Yeah, and it sets up the entire offense. And whether it's a game where they're like this, where, I mean, relatively quickly, it was out of hand for their competition, where they didn't have to continue to push downfield, where he could be that manager
right.
type. You know, the Broncos are going to be apt to come get mm-hmm. him, mm-hmm. and they're going to be a little pissed off about the last time they didn't get to him. So I don't see any more left-handed throws, although he has attempted two. but I'm a little concerned that more film and replacements on the line, you know, this is something where he's going to be in a position where he may not be able to have the time to go downfield. He's going to have to continue this kind of intermediate range, shorter range type quick-paced offense.
Well, but what I will say, and this goes to Seth's point, this was from PFF earlier, highest percentage of open throws this season, Patrick Mahomes. At or beyond the sticks, Patrick Mahomes. 20-plus yards downfield, Patrick Mahomes. He has been so good finding the open guys, and I think that's what's made him incredibly efficient.
Yep, and he does it all over the field. And I do agree, he might not have time to sit in the pocket and really dissect the Broncos quite as much as he did against the Bengals. But overall, they're going to try to do some things. I think they'll try to contain him and stuff. But I think it's a two-way street. Briscoe pointed out very aptly, I thought, this is our first opportunity to see Mahomes against a team that he's played before in the same season, right? Because he played the Broncos last year, but that was a very different scenario. They've seen what the Broncos want to do with him. They've seen it. And you can't convince me with everything we've seen from Patrick Mahomes that he didn't learn from that and that Andy Reid didn't learn from that. So I personally think the fact that they've played already once before, I think that favors the superior coach. And Andy Reid is a much better coach. I mean, it's so – oh, my
you
goodness.
Think?
And so I think that favors the superior coach. And I think it favors with what Mahomes, everything we've seen all year, the progress he's made from the first preseason game until now is scary. It is scary. And so I think – I really think – and we'll see what happens. You know, it's a division game. You never know. But I think you're going to see – you know, Denver came out and played the Chiefs early better than any team has this year by far, except maybe the Patriots. And I think you're going to see a very, very different beginning to the game.
Well, and the nice thing about what Mahomes has done this year, and Ryan, I'm sorry to interrupt you, is that he doesn't have to have the deep ball to be effective. That, I think, is a huge key. Now, one question I have to ask both of you, though, looking forward going into this game and the rest of the season, and I'm going to even look forward into next year. Do you think he continues to run shotgun most of the rest of the season and even next year? Or do you think that changes at all?
Yeah, I think it could change some, but I don't see a whole lot of it. I mean, it ain't broke. You don't need to fix it.
No, I understand. I just was curious if you guys think he'll go to more of a traditional style, or you think that this is part of him reading the field and this is what Andy thinks he's good at, so that's what they're going to do.
I think it's what we're going to see. It's the running trend in the NFL for a reason. I do think you'll see Reed continue to be on the cutting edge, but the reality is being in the shotgun is the most efficient way to pass the ball, and passing the ball is the most efficient way to win and to score points. And Kareem Hunt has no problems running out of shotgun. Nope. And so I think you're going to continue to see it.
Okay.
Well, that brings us to what we're going to do now, because Chris and I will be back with our predictions tomorrow. But Seth, how do you see this one going?
I thought they'd blow the Broncos out last time, and the Broncos came in and played their very best game of the year, in my opinion, and they still got beat, and that was at Mile High. I think Arrowhead, I mean, each passing week, I think Arrowhead's going to continue to get more and more electric, and people are sensing there's something different going on here. I think the Chiefs jump on them early, and with where the Broncos are at right now from a mental standpoint, I don't think they're going to be able to handle getting jumped on. I think this one's going to be at least a two-score win for the Chiefs.
Okay, folks, that's where Seth sees it. We'll let you know what we think tomorrow. Fellas, thank you for all the time today. We ran long, you know, because we never run short. So until they play again, Seth, we'll talk to you next week and look at the film. Thanks for your time.
Hey, it's always awesome getting to have the whole gang together.
All right, folks, thank you for listening today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening.